is time now for History Matters, and for that we are joined by the one and only, the gregarious, the magisterial, the punctual Scott Washington, town historian extraordinaire, to help us out with this week in history. How are you?
I'm just delighted to be here, Aaron. And
on time, as always.
Sure, that's right. I'm sure people are wondering, when they hear that theme, is there an orchestra right here in the studio? And yes, there is.
Well, we've had enough live and local, like live musicians playing, that we know that we can fit a pretty sizable band.
That's right. Yeah, it would probably work.
Fatlinks was here a couple of weeks ago. They had their full-on drum kit sitting over there in the corner. And like you and I are here in the studio, we can see it's not a large studio.
Right.
They made it, like they had their full like two or three amps and a drum kit and guitars and four guys playing. It was great.
And if you want to see radio live, come on down to University Mall and you can actually see.
You can look in the
window.
Studio.
That's right. So come on down here. Anytime.
Well, now that the sun's down, we can lift this shade after when the sun sets, we have to lower this shade and you can't see in. But the sun's down. We've got the shade up.
That's
you can come say hi.
See how radio. Radio is made.
Exactly.
But this is a good week. And did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. Did you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's always good. And I'm always thankful for WCHL and all the good folks here, as I'm sure all the listeners are as well. This is a good week because there are some really interesting nuggets. Let's start with November 28th, 1785. And this is a little known, little bit of trivia, the U.S. state of Franklin. And it used to be in colonial times that North Carolina stretched from the Atlantic all the way to the Mississippi, encompassing all of what is today Tennessee. But once you got past the mountains, that part of the, what was then North Carolina didn't get a lot of good representation.
Yes.
So some of the settlers took it upon themselves to create this state of Franklin. But I understand, and of course it did, its biggest thing was that the settlers negotiated with the Cherokee, and there was peaceful settlement during that time period. They did lobby Congress to become a full state, and Congress said, well, tell us more. And they had no currency.
They had nothing.
No,
yeah.
they traded with furs, and at that was it. They could not get the necessary number of states to ratify this as a state. And Ben Franklin wanted nothing to do with that.
Yeah, yeah, because they named the state. They were going to name the state after Franklin. It was
right.
Like, yeah,
no. I don't think so.
I wear furs. I don't use them as currency. Thank you.
That's right.
And even that's going to be looked down on in a couple hundred years. So
John Sevier is the one who's this first governor of this fledgling state. Only lasts a few years. And then he gets slapped on the wrist. Don't do that. The land gets back to North Carolina. North Carolina immediately goes ahead and cedes it back to the federal government, which creates the state of Tennessee, and the first governor is John Sevier.
John Sevier, Okay, here's the thing that I have learned, because I know how much you love the state of Franklin. We've talked about this kind of weird, forgotten moment in American history.
Right. Great creativity.
Yeah. So the state of Franklin existed for a hot second, and then Congress puts the pre-Constitution Congress, the Articles of Confederation Congress, puts the kibosh on it in 1785, and that's the end of the Franklin story. Constitutional Convention of 1787. You're looking at me quizzically, so you don't know this story.
This is why I love coming here, because I learn so much.
Yeah, so as a history buff, I read a bunch of history books and like really focusing on early American history. But the one thing that I had not done until like a couple weeks ago is the nerdiest thing in the whole wide world, which is to actually sit down and read James Madison's notes from the Constitutional Convention,
which
he took. It's been published in book form. You can read them.
Now,
they're incredibly boring.
Now, did you need to buy by candlelight, or was this...
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
This
was
not
that day when the power
went
out. Yeah. So I'm reading them, and in the middle of July, they're in Philadelphia. This is July 23rd, 1787.
Right.
They're in Philadelphia, and they're talking about apportioning representation, and they're talking about the Great Compromise, where the House of Representatives is apportioned by population, and the Senate gets two votes per state. And there are people who are upset about this because they're worried about the upsetting the balance between northern and southern states and big states and little states and urban states and rural states. And Nathaniel Gorham, who is a delegate to the convention, stands up and says, well, we need to consider the fact that right now we're dealing with 13 states, but there are going to be more. Kentucky, Vermont, Maine, and Franklin
are all
going to become new states in the future. So 2 years after the rejection of Franklin as a state, the Constitutional Convention, all of the delegates, the framers of the Constitution, are talking about the state of Franklin as if it's going to achieve statehood in the coming years, which it in fact does. They just call it Tennessee.
I'm open-mouthed, and I am amazed. I am truly amazed that it actually
I read that, and I was like, oh, my God, Scott Washington needs to hear this.
And I had never heard that before, so I am learning. I'm sure there are cars swerving on the freeway. This is news. But
July 23rd, 1787.
Wow, that's amazing.
That happened.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, we'll have to celebrate that day whenever July 23rd comes along. And
Franklin Day?
Franklin Day, exactly.
Franklin actually got a shout out in the Constitutional Convention.
That is really incredible. Yeah. I just love that kind of stuff. And of course, over in Durham at DPAC, there's Hamilton playing. So
yes.
People are getting a new consciousness about this exciting period of history when there's a lot of creativity. And we hear a lot of different news stories, but in a nation of 326 million now, back in colonial days, 1776, 2.5 million, we've grown slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
It is these individuals who come forth with creativity, and there's a lot more of those kind of stories.
The other fun fact, you mentioned Hamilton, and I don't know if you've seen Hamilton, if you got a chance to see it at DPAC. Yeah, so did I, and it's a great show.
Astounding.
Oh, my God. It's on stage for 3 more days. So get your tickets. I think they're going fast. At DPACNC.com, or just hang out outside and ask people. You can enter the drawing,
right.
But there's a line in Hamilton about how Hamilton gets to be, and he's a very wordy, talky kind of guy, and they're talking about him in the Constitutional Convention where he gets up and he delivers this 6-hour speech, and this is taken in the musical as this moment of triumph for Hamilton, that this is like his crowning achievement at the time. What is not mentioned in the show, but is in fact true in reality, is everyone mostly had no idea what he was even talking about for 6 hours, mostly ignored what he said. And the next day, after he delivers the 6-hour magnum opus of a speech, which everyone immediately ignores, he stands up again and says, okay, so I think I was misunderstood. Let me clarify. And you know that everyone is like, oh.
Yes, but what you just said is people are breathing a sigh of relief. Like, I couldn't even get through these things. So even back in the day, people are like, who are these people?
So that's my Franklin contribution.
Well, here's another one from this time
happened?
Period. And it's you mentioned about Alamance County stores and Mebane. Mebane is named after an actual patriot of this state, Alexander Mebane, who was born on November 26, 1744. And he played an active role in the Revolutionary War, served as a delegate to the Provincial Congress in Halifax, and became sheriff of Orange County, which at that point was comprised 12 counties. Today, a post he held until 1780, and served in the militia for Orange County. And again, because there wasn't a Alamance County, it was this large Orange County. And then served as a auditor of the Hillsborough Constitutional Convention of 1788, and then the following year at the Fayetteville Convention of 1789, when the state finally ratified the convention. But he was one of those people who had, they're called anti-federalists, but they're really the skeptics who looked at this new constitution and said, it's good but not good enough, and held out for a Bill of Rights being proposed to the Congress and the ratifying states. That's the role that North Carolina plays, and so he plays a central role. So anytime anybody rolls into Mebane and sees all the good shops down there on Clay Street, they can also say, hey, there was a really founding person whose name is associated with this. That's important.
There you go.
Now, do you have another little bit of...
I do, unfortunately. I closed
this
the Google Drive,
night.
So
I
don't
so
have
glad.
Anything. There was a... I'm going to have to, next time we talk about the Hillsborough Constitutional Convention, remind me, because I'll pull up the note on this. A lot of the delegates in Hillsborough hated the Constitution,
yes.
And there were people who, when the Hillsborough Convention came back and said no or postponed their initial vote. There were a lot of Federalists, like supporters of the Constitution, like, oh, those idiots in North Carolina. And some of, I don't have the document pulled up anymore, but the language that they used to describe the delegates from Hillsboro was colorful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear
no,
more.
Super
See, this
fun.
Is why people have to keep tuning into the show to hear what's happening next, because that I would love to hear.
Yeah.
I'd love hearing that kind of additional information about this.
It's like nattering nabobs from Hillsboro or some Spiro Agnew-y
well,
phrase or other.
They wasn't sure that they rejected it, and people thought there was just a lot of confusion, and that was fine because.
Well, this is the story. I don't have the line about Hillsboro pulled up, but the people who actually saved the Constitution were in Massachusetts because the Constitution gets written and it's submitted to the states for ratification, and you need 9 to officially ratify the Constitution.
Right.
But to be honest, you need certain states in particular. Like, this isn't going to work without Virginia. This isn't going to work without New York. This isn't going to work without Massachusetts. And really, you need a critical mass of like 10 or 11. You might be able to pressure North Carolina or Rhode Island if they're being reticent, but you really need this critical mass. So it goes to the states, and Delaware ratifies right away, and Pennsylvania and Georgia, and like all these states immediately ratify.
Right.
But those are the easy states. Those are the ones where you know you're going to get, this is like, are the Democrats going to win the Senate race in California this year? Yeah, well, yes. So we can cross that off the board. And then we start focusing on the harder states. And then it gets to Massachusetts. And there's this fight in Massachusetts, which everyone kind of assumed they were going to ratify the Constitution. And then the anti-federalists, all of a sudden, they have this critical mass and this majority in the delegation, and it looks like it's going to go the other way. And if Massachusetts votes no, they're only like the fifth
problem.
Or sixth state, because as soon as Massachusetts votes no, that sends a signal to Virginia and New York and all these other states. New Hampshire isn't 100% sure, so it's got to pass Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And it's John Hancock and Samuel Adams who are the ones who finally step forward, and one of them, I think Adams was the one who was not a fan of the Constitution, and Hancock a little bit less so, but neither of them were 100% thrilled with it. Both of them stepped forward and said, okay, what if we ratified it with suggested amendments? And that compromise is what got Massachusetts to go along with the Constitution, and that becomes the model for other states like New York and eventually North Carolina. But if Hancock and Adams hadn't come forward with that compromise, Massachusetts would have voted no, and the whole thing would have fallen apart.
Well, that's
so it's
why,
those two people.
Oh, well, that makes total sense. And that's why actually James Iredell thought that the Article 5, which allows for amending the Constitution, was truly brilliant.
Yes.
And he was relieved, because otherwise it's a rigid document. But because of that, then it allows flexibility. So sometimes when you hear people saying, let's get back to the Constitution, it's like, well, how Amish do you want to get? With all respect to the Amish, but do you want to go back to certain times? And these other amendments are actually not extras. They are part
they
of
are
the Constitution.
The Constitution.
That's right.
Yeah.
Women's right to vote, lowering the voting age to 18. These are part of the Constitution.
Yeah.
And that's a very important point.
And
so,
what did the Constitution mean in 1787?
Oh, yeah.
There were people who disagreed on that. And there were,
That's right. And to know that we had 2.5 million people, today we have 326 million people. And a lot of advances that have taken place then and since, because people have said, what does this mean in the larger sense? And that's important.
So after all of that Constitution talk, we're almost out of time, and we've got time for like one or two more.
Good Lord.
So
all right, well, then
you've got to mention the Rocky Mount speech, I think.
Yes, that one is really important, and that's the one that takes place on
Tuesday the 27th. Yep.
Yeah. 1962, Martin Luther King delivers a speech in Rocky Mount before a crowd of nearly 2,000 in the gymnasium of Booker T. Washington High School. And he uses a lot of expressions that finally make their way into landmark I Have a Dream speech, including that one, I Have a Dream That One Day Right Here in Rocky Mount, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will meet at the table of brotherhood. And I mean, this is powerful stuff, but he starts practicing it. And I think that's the other way we see history made sometimes, is that some of these great themes get developed at different places, different times, and lifted up. Also this week is when Rosa Parks, sat down on the bus, which was 1955, December 1st. So this was a big deal that changes everything. And sometimes you stand up by sitting down. And I think that's an important one. So those are really important things. We've all talked about colonial history, but these are the modern day history that actually has an element, and people make a difference every single day. And that's something to celebrate and to be grateful for, just like WCHL.
And that is History Matters. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eric. I learned so much at this program.